let's get started. So my name is Marek Olszewski, and today we're going to be talking about Shrubs, which is a new Zcash-style gas-efficient privacy protocol that you can implement as a smart contract. And so this is joint work with Cella Labs and Matter Labs with the following folks: Alexander Vlasov, Alex Kupovsky, Aaron Cromer, Kobe Gurkar, and myself. Cool, so let's begin. So first of all, why privacy? Why Shrubs at all? And so maybe just as some quick context. So Cella is essentially a mobile-first kind of fork of Ethereum, which allows us to build kind of a user experience like this. And so it has a lot of focus on the light client side of things. And so we use snark-based proofs to prove that a header is part of the chain. We have a stable coin that's backed in part by ETH, which is why it's relevant to the ETH community. And then we have a way to send payments to phone numbers. So all of that means that if you want to send a payment to a friend, say you want to pay someone back for coffee, you can find them in your contact list. And since Cella lets you send payments to phone numbers in a decentralized way, you can quickly send, say, five Cella dollars to them. And since it's 2019, of course, you can also include an emoji. And critically, you can pay for this transaction using the stable token itself. And so the whole experience is quite quick. It's fully decentralized. This is running a light client that syncs using that Zcash-based light client protocol. And so it allows you to recreate kind of a Venmo or a PayPal-like experience that is fully permissionless and fully peer-to-peer. So that's Cella. And given that it has this really big focus on sending things that are useful as a medium of exchange, sending stable value, we hypothesize that privacy is actually even more important for such a network than for coins that are primarily store value coins. And so we spent a fair amount of time thinking about how we can add privacy to Cella. And again, Cella is fork of Ethereum, and it has an EVM, and so everything that we're going to talk about today is completely applicable to Ethereum. And so we had three goals. We wanted to make the balances of these transactions fully private, and since we didn't want linkability, we wanted to keep the recipient and sender addresses fully private as well. And so this is, I think, something that isn't that common today in other Ethereum-based privacy solutions. And then finally, we wanted all of this to work really well on mobile. Cella, again, is mobile-first, and so we wanted it to work nicely on mobile. And so, to reach these goals, we decided to look at Zcash and start porting Zcash into a Solidity smart contract. And we quickly ran into a few issues. So, number one, the gas cost is perhaps not surprisingly quite high. And number two, the mobile support is actually not that great. And so for this talk, I'm going to mostly focus on the former and just kind of hint a little bit about possible solutions for the latter. So maybe just some super quick background on Zcash, just to get everyone on the same page. So in Zcash, there's a number of operations, one of which is this shielding operation. So that's when you take one public ZEC and turn it into one private ZEC. So this is a shielding operation. And the way that you do that is you create a serial number, and then you sample some randomness from somewhere. And then you can compute a commitment to that serial number, CM. And then you create a public transaction that shares that commitment while spending one ZEC. And the miners will add that transaction, will take that ZEC, put it into a escrow pool that backs basically the private coins, and then adds this commitment to what's known as a commitment Merkle tree. And once that commitment is in the Merkle tree, then it exists, then that one ZEC exists in this private world of Zcash. Yeah, so here we go, we add that node to that. So next up, how do you then spend this private coin? I think one of the easier things to understand is how do you turn it back into a public coin. So that's called deshielding. And I should add that for both this and the last example, we're talking about this kind of simplified construction that exists in the zero cash paper. It's actually a little more complicated than this, but just for purposes of making it easy to understand, and then kind of focus on the simplified construction. But as we're kind of turning this back into a public ZEC, a T-address ZEC, you have to reveal the serial number to your commitment. So let's assume we're using this commitment over here. And then in zero knowledge, you have to prove that you know of some randomness, you know of R, such that this commitment, CM, appears in this commitment Merkle tree. And the way you do that is you construct a Merkle path that goes up to the roof, and inside a snark circuit, you effectively prove that this Merkle path exists and is valid. And then other full nodes or miners would then take this proof, verify it, and they verify it by giving to the proof the same Merkle root tree which they themselves have. And if the proof verifies, then they add the serial number that you just revealed earlier to what's called a nullifier set, so that you can't overspend that commitment again, and then gives you that one ZEC back from the escrow and contract that basically backed all of the private coins. And so if you wanted to then transact privately, you're in effect doing the deshielding operation and the shielding operation back to back. So you first prove that you have one of these commitments, and then you create a new commitment, usually tied to the recipient's address. Does that more or less make sense? So, why is this difficult to do in smart contract? The answer is it's not difficult, but it is expensive. So if you were to use a tree that's around 32 levels high, then, and this is what Zcash uses today, Zcash recommends a bigger tree, but Zcash has been kind of steadily increasing their tree size with every upgrade. But if you were to have a tree of this height, then you would require around 1.7 million gas just to make an insert operation into this tree. So not even counting the kind of gas needed to verify the actual proof. Yeah, and this is assuming you're using the MIMC hash function, which we had to use in order to have efficient proving times on mobile devices. So if you use SHA-256, this would be cheaper, but it would just be very, very expensive to actually construct the proofs and construct the transactions on your phone. So we implemented MIMC in a smart contract, and if you include that, then it takes about 1.7 million gas to make these changes. And this is even with optimizations to the tree structure. So we spent a bit of time trying to make this quite efficient. So again, why is it expensive? Well, if you insert one of these leaf nodes, you have to compute the hashes going all the way up to the roof, so that you can update the latest Merkle commitment. And so that requires H hashes, and depending how you're storing the tree and how you're optimizing things, potentially up to H storage updates, which is pretty expensive. And then, of course, as you make the tree bigger, so you can support more total transactions, this becomes even more expensive. So how do we improve on this? So we came up with what people are calling shrubs. And the basic idea is that we have a Merkle kind of variant of a Merkle tree, which we're calling a Merkle shrub tree. And in this data structure, the tree is not defined by the root, but it's instead defined by the path to the rightmost non-empty node. So that means to the basically the frontier of this tree that we're filling from the left and going to the right. And as an optimization, instead of storing that entire path, since some of the nodes on that path may not have children on their right side, we can actually store fewer nodes than all H nodes. And so we only store the nodes needed to actually calculate this, the hashes that each of these nodes along this path. And we call these nodes required to reconstruct this path as shrubs. And we call them that because if you include the path, it kind of looks a little bit like a shrub, not quite a tree. And so what does a proof look like using this new data structure? So you basically have to construct a Merkle proof that doesn't end up at the root, but instead ends up at this frontier path. So say that we want to prove that this node is part of this set, then you construct a Merkle path that doesn't go all the way to the root, but it goes to this node, which is part of the frontier. And so to do that, you need this node, and then you can compute that, and then you can compute that and verify that it matches what should be there. And then if you want to verify this proof, you need to know the frontier. Instead of knowing just the Merkle root commitment, you need to know this whole frontier, or again, as optimization, the shrubs that you can use to generate that frontier. So let's look at another example. Say that you want to verify this guy. If you go all the way up to the top, will intersect the frontier at the root. And that's fine. The root is part of the frontier as well. So the algorithm works just as before. You just need a few more nodes as part of your Merkle proof. And so, in effect, what we're doing is we're trading off the amount of work that you have to do to perform these inserts with the work that you have to do to verify these Merkle proofs. To verify a Merkle proof, you have to provide more public inputs, which makes the verification a little bit more expensive. But as we'll find out, the trade-off is actually well worth it. So it all comes down to the cost of inserts. So what does an insert now look like? Again, that was the expensive thing in a traditional Merkle tree. Say that we want to insert this node over here. So we just insert it into the next slot as we're incrementally building this tree from left to right. And then we have to compute all of the hashes and update all of the shrubs that are needed to construct this new frontier that exists. And so if you look, these are the shrubs needed to construct the frontier before we added this node. And these are the ones that are needed to calculate the frontier after we added the node. And since the only new shrub is an actual leaf node that we have already added, you actually only need one update and zero hashes to perform this insert. So that's pretty efficient, and that translates obviously into very good gas savings. Now, we're not always going to be so lucky. So it turns out that the actual amount of work that you have to do in this data structure depends on where you're inserting into the tree. So let's imagine that we're inserting into the next leaf. These are the shrubs now needed to construct the frontier that I'm actually not showing. So the frontier would go to the right, probably, and then off to the left. And since we have to calculate the value of this node, we need this left child, and then ultimately this leaf, since that's the only node contributing to that hash. And since we already had this in the previous shrub, all we have to do is insert this node, which we're doing as part of the insertion. We have to update this, and to update this, we need to compute the hash of this and the hash of this. And so that means that you're doing two updates and two hashes to insert this. And so in the expected case, you end up having to do about 1.5 updates and about one hash on average. So obviously, in the worst case, you may have to go all the way to the top of the tree. But what is, I think, interesting is in the expected case, this is actually quite cheap. So what's the performance? So we actually implemented this in a Solidity contract, and you can access it here if you're interested. Just github.com/seller-org/shrubs. Yes, question?
So you leak which subtree you're in?
When you're doing
does it verify, like, does you need to know whether you're going to go back to the previous picture? whether you're in the right subtree or in the left subtree or whatever.
So the verifier only has to provide as a public input to the proof, the actual shrubs needed to construct the frontier. And then in zero knowledge, you actually do the proof that your node is connected to that frontier. So the verifier doesn't actually, isn't able to infer where in the tree you are. Cool, so coming back to performance, we implemented a few variants of the different Merkle trees and benchmarked them for a tree height of 32 levels. And the basic implementation, not surprisingly, is slow, requiring 1.8 million gas for every insert. It doesn't matter where in the tree you're inserting, you're always going to the root of the tree, and so it's always expensive. Then in the optimized case, we're able to shave a little bit of the time or gas, it ends up being around 1.7 million gas. And then in shrubs, in the worst case, it's still 1.7. But in the best case, it can be as low as 45,000 gas, which is quite incredible. And then in the mean case, on average, it's just under 100,000, which is still pretty good. And so the next question is, okay, so if you were to use this data structure, and if you were to implement Zcash, what would the actual cost of a transaction be entirely in Solidity? And so we implemented the verification piece of that in Groth 16. And we ended up with these numbers. So on average, the commitment insert takes around 1,000. Depending on how many inputs you have to your core operation, so you can have one or two inputs, you're going to have to add one or two entries to the nullifier set. So this would take around 26,000 or twice that to prevent double spends longer term. And then next you have to pre-process the public inputs. And so in this case, the public inputs are now these shrubs. So this actually costs more than before. Before you only had to put the Merkle root as the public input. But with EIP 1108, this is going to be a lot cheaper with the next hard fork. And so it's still pretty reasonable, around 300,000. And then finally, you have to do the actual verification, which requires around four pairing operations, I believe, which adds another kind of roughly 200,000. And so the total cost is around 500,000, depending on how many inputs you have again, which is about 2x more expensive than Aztec, but you get no linkability. So all of your recipients and sender addresses are now private. Now, we also looked at what this would look like in Plunk. We didn't implement this like we did with Groth 16, but we did do some estimates. And the reason Plunk is interesting is because the processing of the public inputs is a lot cheaper. You don't have to do modular exponentiation, so this is actually quite cheaper. Unfortunately, this ends up being a fair amount more expensive. So the overall price, the overall cost of the gas is higher, but this is still potentially interesting because as you increase the height of the tree, you're going to have less gas added here versus here. Here, this is proportional to the height of the tree, and so you might end up paying quite a, much, quite a bit more as you increase the height of the tree. So generally, we're hopeful that with some optimizations, we can lower this and potentially get to a point where it's even cheaper than using Groth 16. With an even higher curve. And all of these things will be cheaper with the following. Yeah. Cool. So I mentioned mobile. What about it? So the nice thing is by using MIMC, the proving times are quite short, so that's quite elegant. So you can construct these transactions in just a few seconds on a $200 phone. But unfortunately, Zcash is not that like client friendly, so it's hard to know which transactions are for you. Since they are encrypted, you would have to try to decrypt every transaction in every block to find which transactions are actually coming to you. So that's obviously hard to do as a like client. And it's also hard to know what your hidden input should be to construct those Merkle proofs going up to the the frontier. A full node can figure this out pretty easily because they see every transaction. They can maintain the piece of the tree that they care about to construct those proofs. But a light client, you wouldn't want to actually query a full node to find those nodes because that would reveal which of the commitments are on their own. And so this is still kind of an unsolved problem. And so one solution is to use operators and to introduce the concept of a decryption key. A decryption key would allow third parties to decrypt all transactions that are for you without having giving them the ability to actually view the transactions to see the balances in the senders. And so we're looking into potentially doing that. So that with just a limited amount of trust, you can have a full node help you do these things. And so that's it. Just want to thank you for your time and, yeah, answer any questions.
Just to confirm, do you mean that the size of the proof is variable depending on which link we have?
Yeah, so the size of the amount of gas that you have to pay, not the size of the proof, but the amount of gas that you have to pay will be different depending on where you are in that commitment tree. And so one way of actually making this a little bit more uniform is to use a gas token so that everyone contributes more or less the same amount of gas. And if you happen to be unlucky and you have to go all the way to the root, then you can lean on that gas token more than other folks.
But is the question about the size of the proof?
So it's not about the size of the proof, it's more about the size of the merger pool, so the number of steps you need to have the proof, and for you under the variable aspect in the circuit itself. So you always pass the fixed edge.
Yeah.
So if you pass what the height of the tree to this sound.
Yeah, we can chat more offline. Yep.
Does this have any differences between merge and mark merge, or is that?
I believe so, but I'm not the right person to ask. So let's chat more afterwards.
So it's slightly different. It was inspired by merge and mark merges, but it's slightly different concept where you always have a fixed size commitment. So in minimum. Or else you want to.
So in a Merkle tree, a Merkle tree is a cryptographic accumulator which gives you a constant size commitment to a vector of values, right? And this commitment is the root of the tree. With Shrubs, it's also a cryptographic accumulator with a commitment size proportional to this height of the tree, and it's determined by the edge of the tree, like of the entire edge which you have the root. Then next element on the right, next element.
The root for every complete subtree.
Yes. Yeah. And this edge is your commitment, and you have to pass this commitment, so like all the items on the edge, to the snark. But since we have a tree of a fixed size, we just pick a size of like 2 to the power of 32, this size of commitment will be also fixed, which is just logarithm of this, which is 32. Which we can pass as inputs to the snark, or we can also optimize to just compress them in a hash.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I think that's time, but we'll be outside if you have any more questions.